Good morning, everybody.
We left off on the first line of medium width line of Hossam et al. And just by way of introduction, I started this last week, but slightly fuller. There are three issues, actually, when it comes to Kriya Shema, Tfila, and presumably all Dvarim Shebekdusha in the context of excrement. Number one is the question of being in the same place. And we'll talk, and we have to talk about what defines being in the same place. We do have a principle that al yetze ish mimikomo bayom hashvi'i, a person's makom is dalet al dalet amos. So the first issue would be is that if one is within dalet amos of any substance of this nature, so then that could potentially be a problem. And then we have to talk about what defines one place, though. What if you put a mechitza in between? What if not a mechitza in between, but what if it's what we would call a halachic mechitza? When I say halachic mechitza, it means, as we'll say, the Gemara says, supposing I'm standing here, and next to me is a ground level, which is more than 10 tefachim high, and the ground kind of goes straight up, and that's considered a separate makom, because that side of the ground is like a wall, and it's 10 tefachim tall, so that's like on top of that higher patch of ground is a separate makom. So that's issue number one. Issue number two is a question of sight, even if it's not in your same makom. And this is a particularly interesting issue because there is a concern. I don't know if we've encountered it yet. I don't know if we've seen this line in the Gemara yet about soa lefana, when you can see it and how far away it has to be. But on Daf Kaf Hamid Beis, which we're not going to get to today, there is a discussion in the Gemara or a distinction made between erva ba'ashashis and soa ba'ashashis. Now, shashis, I think it's just a glass. There's a glass barrier in between. And an erva ba'ashashis is considered erva. So if I want to read Kriya Shema and there's someone on the other side of my glass partition, male or female, who's unclothed, and so even though there's a mechitza in between, nonetheless, there is a problem of reading Kriya Shema. Whereas if I see excrement on the other side of the mechitza, the Gemara is going to say that's not an issue. So we have to kind of talk about the second issue is being sight, and then the third issue is the question of smell and being able to smell, and that the is some kind of an issue, although it's going to be interesting sort of to think about how some of that plays out as well. So the Gemara starts out with literally first word on first medium line, itmar, reach ra sheyesh lo ikar. If there is a bad smell, which actually has a source. Now, obviously, from a chemical perspective, all, as I think I may have said this last week, all smells, by definition, are functions of particles. But when we talk about a reach ra sheyesh lo ikar, it means something that we can actually see tangibly. So sometimes there will be an odor or a malodor lingering in the air, which obviously means, chemically speaking, there are particles there that our olfactory sense picks up on, but we wouldn't look at it and say, oh, there is a thing that the smell is coming from. We would say the smell is there. As opposed to if there is the object which is generating the molecules, which is generating the smell, which we can identify, we can see there's a piece of excrement sitting there. So we would say it's a reach ra sheyesh lo ikar that has a root. Rashi says a reach ra she'en lo ikar means, hafacha. Someone passes gas. So obviously, again, biologically speaking, there is a source for that, but nonetheless, we don't actually see the ikar, and that's called therefore it's called the reach ra she'en lo ikar. And that's Rashi in the Dibur HaMatzil, she'esh lo ikar on the fourth narrow line in Rashi. It says, shatzoa munacha shama musracha. There is a reach ra she'esh lo ikar, there is excrement there, and it smells. We're going to talk about at the end of our Amud, when does excrement no longer have the status of excrement? How dried out does it have to be? How desiccated does it have to be? And Rashi then says, though, continuing here, v'she'en lo ikar hafachas haruach. En lo ikar means someone passes gas. Tosus raises a very interesting question. Tosus, the second Tosus, writes that reach ra she'en lo ikar, yesh b'farshim debate kisa'o shalanu ba'omeh, im yesh b'hem achitza mafsekes havi kama reach ra she'en lo ikar, kama bate kisa'os de parsoi. Tosus raises an interesting possibility. Apparently, the Beis HaKisei, the Persian bathrooms, of which ours are, our modern day bathrooms in many ways are very similar, though not quite the same. Apparently, in the Persian bathrooms, as soon as the excrement would fall into the hole in the ground, it would kind of roll away. I don't know if it got washed away, it would roll away. So you actually, in a Persian Beis HaKisei, in Beis HaKisei de Parsari, you never actually had any excrement present, and most you had a smell. And Tosfos assumes that is a reach ra she'en lo ikar. Whatever smell is there, the ikar is never there. So Tosfos apparently, I guess in medieval France, they dug the holes pretty deep in the ground. So Tosfos raises the possibility, maybe that's called the reach ra she'en lo ikar, even though the excrement is there because it's so far away. But okay, but for the moment, let's assume that we're dealing with easily identifiable excrement. So the question is, how far away do you have to be? Reach ra she'esh lo ikar. Rav Huna amar, marchik dal ramos v'kore. Rav Huna says that all you need to move is 4 amos away from where the object is, where the excrement is. What Rav Huna does not explicitly address is, what if you can still smell it? What if you can still smell it there? So obviously moving 4 amos away means that Rav Huna is concerned about your not being in the same makom as the tsoa, as the excrement, when you are davening, when you are saying kriya shva. The reason for that is fairly simple, which is the Torah in Parshas Kisetse, in Kisetse la milchama, Kisetse machane aloyevecha, sorry, I gotta get that right, Kisetse machane aloyevecha, when you have an army encampment, the nishmar tami kol davara. You have to keep away from anything that is, I'll call, unsanitary. The Torah there insists, the Gemara will talk about it more later, that a person has to come with a trowel, and when they have to relieve themselves, they have to go outside of the camp. Doesn't say how far that is, and you have to make sure you cover up whatever you leave. So based upon that, the Torah concludes the parsha by stating, the hayo machanecha kadosh, your machane has to be holy, and therefore, if you're not allowed to, if being in a place within the place where tsoa is considered not a makom kadosh, so you can't read kriya shma, you can't read tefillah. And since we might say that makomo shel adam is dalet amos, al dalet amos, you have to be 4 amos away from this thing. The question remains, what if you can still smell it? What if you can still smell it? And that the Gemara doesn't address explicitly. Based upon the way Rav Huna is presenting here, one could have argued that he doesn't care about the reach. Reach doesn't interest him if it has no ikar. That's a difficult reading for reasons that we'll see later, and we'll come back to this question. Rav Chisda Amar, Marchik Dal Ramos Mimakom Sheposak HaReach. He says that you have to stay 4 amos away from where the reach stops. So, in other words, presumably, he would agree, of course, that even if the reach is very limited, you have to be at least 4 amos away from the physical object itself, the ikar. But on top of that, you have to be 4 amos away from where the smell stops. Rav Chisda's position apparently must be even a place where there's a reach ra is considered not a makom kadosh. And therefore, you have to stay dalet amos away even from that, because if you are within 4 amos of where the reach ra is, and 4 amos is considered your makom, then you are not in a makom kadosh. That's the interpretation that the Madana Yom Tov, it's a commentary in the bottom of the Rush, I believe by the author of the Tosfos Yontif, the Madana Yom Tov quotes in the name of the Lavush. One question that arises both for that position, even for Rav Huna's position, is being marchik dalet amos, or say that explanation that I've given, that I borrowed for Rav Huna as well, that when it's within your 4 amos, it's not a makom kadosh, is a little bit difficult, because when we say that a person has a makom of dalet amos or dalet amos, we usually assume that the person's right in the middle of that. Right? In other words, I don't have dalet amos all around me, but I have rather a dalet amos total. The reason why a person who carries in the Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos has violated the Torah prohibition, the reason for carrying, in effect, is because it's considered motzi me'rishus l'rishus. it's the same thing as carrying it from the Shrus HaRabim into the Rishus HaYachid, or the Rishus HaYachid into the Shrus HaRabim, for the private to the public domain, or the public domain to the private domain. So how is that so? The entire time you're in the Rishus HaRabim, you're in the Rishus HaRabim, you're in the public domain, it's all the same place. So the explanation that's offered is that each Dalet Amos, in effect, is like a Makom Bifnei Asmo, and therefore when I carry it from within my Dalet Amos to outside of my Dalet Amos, it's like I took it from one Rishus to another Rishus. But nonetheless, the shear that you get, and as an interesting piece of trivia, by the way, I'll ask anybody, how many amos do I actually have to carry on Shabbos in order to, if I all of a sudden stop here, pick up an object, how far do I have to carry that object in order to be chayev b'chatas? I see Rabbi Lichtstein is puzzling here because he knows it's a trick question, that the answer can't be dalet amos. That's a good one. Yes, Rabbi Lichtstein.
Two.
No. It's 5.6 amos approximately. It is the alach stone. It's the diagonal of the 4x4. If you learn all the Masecha Shabbos and you memorize every single word in the Gemara, you will not know this halacha. I believe it's found in the Gemara in Eruvin. Okay, so anyway, but bottom line is one would think that you're at the middle of your dalet amos. That's your makom. And once you have an object, in other words, you can carry it only within your You're, let's say for tchum purposes, and I want to cite to you one mission in a moment. For tchum purposes, if you, for example, go outside the tchum on Shabbos, right? You go outside the 2,000 amos that you're allowed to go from the edge of the city, and now you just found yourself there by accident. You're only allowed dalet amos or dalet amos. You're only allowed to, you're limited within an area 4x4, not 8x8. So the Mishnah actually in Eruvin on Daf Mehamed Aleph, it's a very short Mishnah, says that a person who fell asleep on Shabbos in the middle of nowhere. And because they were asleep when Shabbos began, they had no intent to be Kona Shvisa, to make that their place of Shabbos and get 2,000 amos all around. So they're stuck. They can't move outside of their 4 amos. So how do you measure the 4 amos? So Rabbi Eliezer says, according to the Mishnah Muhammad Allah, Behuva em Tsa'an. You are in the middle. You wake up in the middle of Harriman State Park on Shabbos. You fell asleep on Friday. And, you have 2 amos in each direction. You can make a square out of it. So you can decide where you want the square to be. You know, not a circle. You're not limited to a circle. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Le'eze Ruach Shayir Te'ilech. Rabbi Yehuda says you can, if you are starting at this point, you can choose to make your square any way, as long as this point that you are at right now will be the pivot of the square. As you can go from this point, you could actually walk as far as diagonally. Imagine your square. You could walk diagonally the 4 times the square root of 2, about 5.6 amos. But even Rabbi Yehuda admits, once you decide what your 4x4 amos are, and you walk within that, you can't say, oops, I changed my mind, let me shift my dalet amos. That is, so that's what the halacha is by tchum. Apparently here, if you're going to accept this lavush, the idea that if there's something within 4 amos of you that's considered in your makom, and that may be the obvious interpretation of the Gemara, you're going to have to say that this is a little bit like Rabbi Yehuda's position, that by definition, you've never chosen anything yet, and since you could choose to go 4 amos in that direction where the Reach Ra is, or where the object is, therefore, that is considered for at least these purposes. We're not talking about tchum here. We're talking about v'haya machanecha kadosh. And for the purposes of determining what your machane is, it will be 4 amos in any direction. Okay. So this is the machlokas, Rav Huna and Rav Chisva. Rav Huna says 4 amos away from the object itself, and maybe the smell has to stop, maybe it doesn't. Rav Chisda says 4 amos away from where the smell stops. The Gemara now says, Tanya's last word on the second medium with line, Tanya kavasei de Rav Chisda. We have a brisa, the Gemara claims at first, that supports Rav Chisda's position. Lo yikra adam kriya shma, lo keneged soas adam, v'lo keneged soas klavim, v'lo keneged soas hazirim, v'lo keneged soas tarnagolim. So first, the Brisa lists 4 different species of creatures, 4 different creatures, where one may not say read Kriya Shema, keneged. Keneged means, presumably, it is opposite you. It might mean you're looking at it, or it might mean anywhere around you. Let's assume anywhere around you for the moment. So you're not allowed to read Keneged, any of these four things. Human beings, dogs, pigs, and chickens. Unfortunately, this is not as inspiring as the four faces on the Merkava, I have to say. Those are much more inspiring. But these are the four animals the Braisa lists. And then it says, V'lo Keneged, and the Gra amends the Girsa, V'lo Keneged Ashva Sherei Hara. If there's a kind of a garbage area, a place where people dump their garbage, and it has a bad smell. My presumption is, if you take out the word, soas ashba, but just ashba, is that if there's a bad smell coming from the ashba, we assume that there is excrement there, that that's what the bad smell is, because that's where people would typically dump their stuff. And therefore, you're not allowed to read kriyashma kineged that ashba. Now, the last two words in this sentence are sherechara. So the question is, there are two things that I think need to be observed about these words. Number one, and Rashi already makes an observation about this, on Dibro Masa Lokan Neget Soas Adam, the four things that are listed, the four kinds of excrement, are things that you're not smelling. You're not smelling, you're not close enough to smell. Only the ashva is described as rehara. That's number one. So I think that Rashi is undoubtedly correct from the singular, sherehara, that the first four things, soas adam, soas klavim, soas hazirim, soas sabidolim, those are all cases where you actually don't smell anything. It's just that you're in the same, it's kineged. It means you're in the same place as those things. And even though you can't smell them, that's the problem, as we'll see how that gets solved in the very next line. Even the ashva itself here, I'm not sure ashva sherehara means that you smell it. It means an ashva whose reach is ra if you went close enough, which should lead you to assume that there is soa there, there is excrement. So even though you're far enough away that you don't smell it, but it's kineged, it's whatever it means kineged exactly, it's in your place, then you're not allowed to read kriyashma. But the crucial point, putting aside the last piece about the ashva, is that the four things of soa here that you're not allowed to read kriyashma kinegdon, are not even if you don't smell them, which is why the next line in the Braisa is v'imhoya makom gavoa asaras tachim, oh nemoch asaras tachim. If the soa is sitting on a platform, or it is in something in the ground, dug into the ground, where it has 10 tachim high or deep, and I presume it means if I'm allowed to borrow the definitions from Hilchos Shabbos of a makom, I assume it has to be 4x4 tefachim. So let's say I have a shelf in my house. You can't see my shelf, but I have a shelf here. It's well more than 4x4 tefachim. So it would seem that if the soa was sitting on the shelf, you know, right above my arm, and I was sitting here, and it didn't smell. So the Braisa says, Yoshe Fitzido Vikori Krishma. It can be literally right near me, but it's in a different makom. I don't know if bookshelves count as that, but if I had the ground, that it was either a pit, or the ground was raised and the soa is sitting on it and I don't smell on it, I can see sitting literally, I mean, it's a little bizarre, you know, I can look over and I see it, but it doesn't matter because I'm considered in a different makom. V'im lav, if it's not in a separate makom, marchik melo enav. So the Braisa here suggests that if I'm in the same place and it suggests that I see it's in front of me. It's not to the side. It's not behind me. It's where I can see it. I have to be marchik mo'ena means until I can't see it. As long as I can see it and it's in front of me, and it's not on a raised place or a deep or a depressed place where it's in a different makom. So even though it's outside of my dalet amos, this is what's kind of interesting. My dalet amos by definition is my makom. It doesn't matter if it's in front of me, behind me, my left or my right. If it's on the same level, four amos is my makom. If it's outside of four amos, if it's to my sides or behind me where I don't see it, that's not a problem. But if it's in front of me, I have to be marchik kimlo enav, as far away till I can't see it. There is an interesting discussion that the Rishonim quote from the Yerushalmi, a story in the Yerushalmi. I'm not sure what the case exactly was in the Yerushalmi, but the upshot of the Yerushalmi was that even if it's night, and you can't see because it's dark, or even if there were a person who was blind and can't see because they're blind, if it is in a place where you could see it, if A, you could see, and B, there were light, that's still being considered in the same, effectively in the same makomes. Right? It seems that it's not predicated upon sight per se, but that anything that's in front of me and that I can see, in theory, it's visible, it should be visible to someone standing in my position, that's considered in the same makom. That would explain, by the way, why on Chafei Amud Beis we will see that Soa Ba'ashashis, if there's a glass barrier so you can see through it, why that's mutter to read Kriya Shema by Soa, because even though I can see it, it's not really the sight that's the issue, but rather the fact that I'm in its presence. And in its presence means in the same Rishus, within four Amos or all around, or in front of me if I'm able to see it. Okay. So, you know, I talk about this as not really coming up, and I don't think it comes up most of these things too commonly, but it would come up, okay, since hiking has gotten a few mentions already, it certainly could come up in the context of somebody hiking, anybody davening outside, basically. This could have been true, people have blocked minyanim, most people do clean up after the dog, so it's not an issue, but you could conceivably encounter a case when you're davening outside where this might potentially be an issue. So that's the rule of the Braisa so far. Not within Dalet Amos anywhere around, and not in front of you where you can actually see it, unless it's on a raised or on a depressed place, in which case it's in a different place. Okay. So now the Gemara continues and says, V'chein l'tfila. This halacha applies to tfila as well, not just to Rishma. And as I think will become apparent from later in the Gemara, it applies to any Dvarim Shebekusha. When the Gemara will talk about a few lines from here, Reach Ra She'ein Lo Ikar, right? Someone passed gas and the odor still expands. So what you are and aren't allowed to do and who can and can't do it, so one of the issues that's involved is Talmud Torah. So it's not just Kriya Shema and Tefillah, it's Talmud Torah. I assume it applies to all Dvarim Shebekusha. Almost all Dvarim Shebekusha. I think there might be an exception. I have a suspicion that when it comes to Reach Rasha Ein Lo Ikar, my memory serves me correctly, Birchas HaMazon might be treated differently. But we'll talk about a little bit that when we get there.
Rabbi, A baby diaper in the room, if it doesn't smell, then it's okay. But if it does smell, then it's not okay.
So I think with a baby, it depends on what age and the food they're consuming. I think, I'll have to give you a very clear answer to that question. With that, I don't want to, before I look at
the question. Let's just say based on what we're learning.
So first, somewhere it said, we haven't seen it, and I don't remember it being on for the rest of the parent, but it's got to be somewhere. If it's not here, it's somewhere else. That it has to be a child who's eating certain things already. Like a baby who's only a breastfed for the first few months, it's not an issue at all, I believe. Whereas once they start eating certain kinds of food, so then it already becomes an issue. I suspect that if there's no smell and the diaper is covering it, so then it's probably not an issue.
Not considered kinegdo.
It's not considered kinegdo. It's considered, it's basically an enclosed thing. You don't see it. It's not in your makom, which is the crucial point, and you don't smell it. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara now the Gemara finally says the part that was what we said until now has nothing to do with Rahuna or Fista per se. Now finally the Gemara says Reach Rashi Shol Ikar. The Brisa says Reach Rashi Shol Ikar. Marchik Dalet Amos Mi Makom Areach Kori Kriya Shema. And that is Rav Chista's position. Not four amos from the object, but four amos from where the smell ceases to be detectable. Now, if I were to stop here and ask you, how do we paskin? Presumably you would say we paskin like Rav Chista. Because the Gemara says, Tanya Kavasei de Rav Chista, he has a braisa to support him. However, the Gemara continues, Amar Rava, Les Hilchasa Ki Hamas Nisa. The halacha is not in accord with this braisa that we just cited. Ela ki hadatanya, but rather in accordance with the following. Lo yikra adam kriyashma. Lo keneged soas adam. Velo keneged soas klovim. I'm skipping a few words. The Gra says it's not in Tosefta. And even if it is in, even if we do want to have the words, you'll understand the point of the Brisa, I think, better if we leave it out. So again, lo keneged soas adam, not in the presence of human excrement. Velo keneged soas klovim bizman shenostan oros litocho. Or bizman sheyesh bahen oros. So you're not allowed, the way almost everybody reads this, you're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema if there is dog excrement, if there are hides for tanning purposes that are sitting in the excrement. And if you want to add in soas chazirim, pig's excrement, so same stipulation applies. The way Rashi, and I think most Rishonim, not all Rishonim read this, almost all Rishonim, soas adam is always a problem. Doesn't matter the context. Soas klavim and soas chazirim only have, are so bad, sting so badly, if they have hides in them. Bizman shenasan oros latochan, or something like that. Now, what was Rava rejecting in the previous price? What was he throwing out? So there's really, I would say, two differences that immediately jump up. One, which may or may not be significant. Number one is this price that leaves out soas tarnagolim. Doesn't talk about the chicken excrement. It also leaves out ashba sherechara. And then it leaves off the second half of the Braisa, Reach Rashi Yeshlo Ikar Marchik Dalar Amos Mimako Mareach Bekorei Kriyashma. So really, it differs in, one more crucial difference. It leaves, and that's the most important part. When it refers to dog's excrement and pig's excrement, it qualifies it by stating it's only a problem if it is in the context of tanning, they have hides in it. So the first crisis lists two more things, but it also lists soas klavim, soas chazerim without any stipulation. And it adds at the end, reach ra, sheish lo ikar, you have to be 4 amos away from the reach stops. The second crisis says nothing about reach ra, sheish lo ikar, how far away you have to be, from where the reach stops. And it also leaves out two items and qualifies pigs, dogs and maybe pigs' excrement as having to be shenasan oros latocha. What many Rishonim say, Rashi, I think, assumes this, Tamid Ibn Yonah assumes this, the Rush assumes this, that the only part of the Braisa that Warva was rejecting was the unqualified soas klavim and soas chazerim. The first Braisa said soas klavim, soas chazerim under all circumstances, or certainly soas klavim, it says under all circumstances. The second brisa says that soas klavim, and maybe, if you don't amend the text as the Gra did, maybe soas chazerim, only if they have oros besocha. But, say those Rishonim, the Rava never rejected Rav Chista's basic premise, that you have to be marchik arba amos from where the reyach stops, not just from where the object is. Now, if I'm going to share my screen with you, that's the wrong, share the wrong one. Try again. Okay, here we go. So the Rambam here is in Perek Yamal Halacha Yudbeis of Hilchos Kriyashva. The Rambam says, Reach Ra Sheyesh Lo Ikar Marchik Dalet Amos Vikorei Im Pasak Hareach. You have to keep 4 amos away, and this is obviously from the Ikar, not from where the Reach stops, because the Rambam says that there's one condition that has to be met once you move 4 amos away, which is Im Pasak Hareach. If the Rambam were passing like Rav Chista, of course Pasak Hareach. He would say, Marchik Al Ramos Fekore, Mimakom shepasakareach. In spot, the Rambam says, in lo pasakareach, if the reach does not stop at Dalet Amos, at 4 Amos, Marchik ad Makom shepasach hareach, you go until the place that you can no longer smell. So the Rambam here clearly is not passing like Rav Chisda. He's passing like Rav Huna. Rav Huna, who said, Marchik Dalet Amos v'kori kriyashma from a reach rashe shalika. But the Rambam is taking as a given that there is no smell anymore, that the smell has ceased. And even though the smell has ceased, Rav Chisda obviously says that's not enough. It has to be 4 amos from where the smell stops. And Rav Huna says, if you can't smell it and you're 4 amos away from the object itself, it means you're not on the object's makom and you don't smell it. So it's not a problem. The Ravid, not surprisingly, took issue with this. The Ravid says, Kosav Ravid, Eino kein, ela marchik arba amos mi makom shepasa kareach vikore. You have to go 4 amos away from where the reach stops. Yehot tanya kevaseid Rav Chisda, the sphere lehochi. Because the Braisa backs Rav Chisda's opinion, who holds that way. Now, if you want to know, where did the Rambam get this idea from? The Ravid is kind enough to reject the Rambam, but to explain the Rambam. Vahad da amar Rava lesilchasa ki hamas nisa. When Rava said, we don't paskin like that Braisa, lav aha amara. He wasn't talking about the part of the Braisa that confirmed Rav Chisda's in. The second Braisa doesn't say anything one way or the other about that. But rather, ela atsoas klavim v'chazirin, debayin misinas oros. The Ravid says that the only part, and this is again, most Rishonim say this way, what Rava was rejecting is the idea that soas klavim and soas chazirin, no matter what, are a problem. Rava says, according to the other Braisa, it has to be bizman shenasan oros lesochan. Only then is it considered smelling badly enough that that's considered a problem for reading Kriya Shema Kinegda. Obviously, working backwards, you can see the Rambam believed that Rava was rejecting the second part of the Braisa or the entire Braisa. You can have it either way. The question is, and the Rif, by the way, is not explicit, but the Rif, by silence, also probably holds like the Rambam, which it, generally speaking, when the Rif is ambiguous and the Rambam reads a particular way, since the Rambam almost never disagrees with the Rif, and almost never, or very rarely, it probably means that's how the Rambam read the Rif. That doesn't necessarily mean it's actually what the Rif meant, but it should give one at least a little bit of pause. The Rambam, remember, was a student of his father, who was really a student of the Rimi Gash. The Rambam almost never differs with the Rimi Gash. And the Rimi Gash was the Rif's Talmud Mopak. So the Rambam is like a third generation Talmud, very rarely disagrees with the Rif. And his halacha should be at least read often as a, possibly a commentary on the Rif. At least you should be thinking about that. But certainly the Rambam explicitly rejects Rav Chisda. So the question you have to ask is why? Because what the Ravid says and what I think Rashi says or other Rishonim say seems to be pretty, I don't say compelling, but pretty logical, which is, Rava never rejects the part of the Braisa that deals with Chisda that you have to, that 4 amos away from where the smell stops. He's just, the only part that he, that the second Braisa addresses is the soas klavim and, soas klavim and soas, chazerim. I'm not sure, but I want to make the following suggestion. The Rishonim grapple with the question of, the fact that chickens were left out of the second Braisa. And in general, how does one relate to the tsoa of any animals that are not mentioned in the Braisa? I've got a cat at home. I don't, but if I had a cat at home, some of the Rishonim did. I have a ferret as a pet. I have a weasel in the Maya that the Rishonim mentioned. So in these cases, what is the status of their tsoa? So the Russian Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah cited Yerushalmi, which suggests that the only time in animals, I don't know about klavim and chazirim, but it says that soas behema, let's say a domesticated animal, let's call it that, soas behema is only a problem if it's a chamor that just was bum in haderach. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it meant that the donkey was more dehydrated, so the there's less liquid fluid in the excrement. Maybe it has a more intense smell, not sure. But what the Rishonim point out is it sounds to that only a chamor habam in hadera. Now, what they take away from that is that smell has to be really, really bad. So, for example, in that spirit, the Rush, and I'm quoting the Balei HaTosfos, not an our Tosfos, says that when it comes to a chicken excrement is not a problem, unless you're in the chicken coop, where the entire thing stinks to high heaven, because there's so much excrement, there's so much whatever else. So basically, the Rishonim kind of contextualize it and say that it depends whether it smells badly or not. The Rambam seems not to have that halach, read the Rishonim that way. The Rambam seems to read the Rishonim as talking about not excrement, but urine, meiraglayim. But the Rambam is much more machmir on the soa of almost all animals, it would seem. And therefore, the possibility has occurred to me. I'm trying to see if I can just see if I'm scrolling up. If you look at the Rambam and Halacha Vav, soas ha'adam, v'soas klavam v'chaserim, v'sman sheish v'sochon oros, v'chol soas sherechara, k'gon ein l'wasa l'kros kriyash v'akenekah. So the Rambam understands that any soa whose reach is ra, which would be most animal excrement, all of that, you're not allowed to read kriyashva. So when the Rambam looks at Rava rejecting the first brisa, which he really focused, is the difference between the two brises really by the soas klavim and soas chazerim, dog and pig excrement, is the difference really about whether they're an oros or not? Or let me suggest another possibility to you. Maybe the first brisa didn't mean to suggest automatically that soas chazerim and soas klavim has to have oros. It's true even if it's not with hides. Maybe he was just giving you an example of things that the smell was bad. When the second brisa says soas adam, below keneged soas chazerim and klavim, when you're doing tanning, when the second brisa says that, that may not be that that's what the argument is. It's just giving more detail. The significant part of the second brisa might be, according to Rava, is that there's no discussion of reach ra sheish lo ikar, you have to be mach dalet amos from the reach. The real, granted, it's an argument from silence, but the real lacuna in the second brisa is that there's no notion of having a problem of staying away four amos from something which is intangible, from reach ra. Only from the excrement itself, from the thing that the ikar itself. So I think that the Rambam and the Riz didn't see the details that distinguish the two brises in the explicit part as being significant. It was just each brise was just giving you examples. And the first brise didn't spell out more fully. And the second brise didn't give you every example. But the real lacuna in the second brise, which they take to be arguing on the first brise, is the idea that reach ra sheish lo ikar, you have to stay four amos away from the reach. And because I think of the Rambam's general view, based upon the way he read the Yerushalmi, that all reach ra, also of animals that produces a smell, is a problem, he couldn't see that as the difference between the two brises. Instead, the only difference he saw between the two brises is the first brisa talks about a reach that's staying four amos away from the reach, and the second brisa chooses to omit it. That's what I think is behind the position of the Rambam. Okay. Before we move on, any questions about that?
When they omit the tsoa of sheep, cattle, camels, and donkeys, is there a reason that's not classified?
It's a good question. I wonder to what extent the cows, the sheep, and the goats were generally found outside of human habitations in the cities. They were generally held out in pasture. Whereas you didn't keep your dogs, I don't know to what extent they had they were domesticated dogs, but the dogs and the cats, and pigs were probably all around, but especially the dogs. So that might be why they don't mention the example. Let's say, according to the Rambam, they don't bother to mention soas, para, and soas, akvasim, and so on, because maybe those were they were busy fertilizing the pastures, which is, by the way, one of the ways they used to fertilize, you look at the Mishnayos and Shrias, is they would pen the animals in one place, leave them there for a few days, and then they'd move the walls of the pen. So that would be my guess. My guess would be is that, to borrow the metaphor, Diber HaKosuv Behova, so Dibru HaChamim Behova. If they deal with the typical case, that's what I would imagine.
Because I could classify it a little differently. I don't know if it's relevant, but dogs and pigs, although we're not accustomed to it, eat flesh. They eat other animals. And the chickens may eat insects, and whereas those other things, the herbivores do not eat those things.
I have often said, I think I said this in my last drasha that I gave at KJ, that the Torah generally permits us to eat the prey, not the predators. Right? That's the distinction in birds. So I think that there is a profound hashkafa in that, in a weird way, we are what we eat. However, I think here, if you were to argue that eating flesh or insects would generate a worse smell, that would be an argument. Maybe that's not what you intended.
Yeah.
I heard something else at the same time. I don't think it's a value statement. I think it's a Matthias question, right?
No, it's a smell question. And that has to do with the baby too.
Right, correct.
If once the baby starts eating meat, it's a bigger problem than before.
What's that?
Once a baby starts eating meat.
Yes, but I think that my recollection is that once the baby starts eating wheat, actually, and they tie this to the Eitz HaDa'as piece, even though it's really about smell, you know. So I think ultimately it might be that we process wheat differently than I don't think actually the cows normally ate wheat either. They ate grass, but they may be related. Yes. And it may be that the eating of, one thing produces one kind of a smell as opposed to eating of a different thing.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Rava, what does Rava think about Reah? You know, he talks about, Kenegan, you know, Rava doesn't talk about Re'achra.
No, it's correct. Rava doesn't, and the idea of, I think that the Rambam is understanding, everybody else understands that Rava quoted the half of the Braisa that disagrees with the first Braisa. You know, there might even be that, according that in Rava's Braisa, there was another line there, which was Re'achra sheish l'liko, merachit al amasim melkom ha-Re'ach, the last line, because, for example, the Chayim Tvila doesn't appear in Rava's Braisa. I don't think anybody's going to say that the second Braisa holds that it only applies to Kriya Shema, not Tvila. Tvila you can dive away around. I don't think anybody's going to say that. So the question is, why is the second half of the Braisa not there regarding Marchik Arba Amos and Malkom Areach? So most Rishonim would say, the Ravid would say, and the Rush would say that it's just because he didn't need to quote it. The same halach applies. Whereas the Rambam says that no, he thinks that that was a crucial part that the Braisa left off. But it's hard to know. Argument from silence is always a very difficult argument.
It's true. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So now the Gemara continues. Now we've done Re'ach Ra Sheyesh Lo Ikar. So now the Gemara says, Ba'u Minei Mei Rav Sheshes. They ask Rav Sheshes the following question. Re'ach Ra She'en Lo Ikar Mahu. I'm not going to suggest this is the reason why they asked Rav Sheshes the question, but please do remember Rav Sheshes was blind. So for Rav Sheshes, despite one could have argued, I've already argued against that based upon the Yerushalmi, one could have said they asked Rav Sheshes this question because for him, you can never see it, so it never has an ikar, which really isn't true, actually. I don't think it would be true. Clearly, if Reish Lakish were within Dalet Amos, a blind person were within Dalet Amos of something and you could smell it, I don't think anybody would argue that because he's blind, he's not considered b'makom that. But anyway, they asked Rav Sheshes a lot of questions throughout Shabbos. So they asked him, Re'ach Rash Ein Lo Ikar Mahu. What's the din, as Rashi says, Re'ach Rash Ein Lo Ikar, someone passes gas, and you can still smell it at the moment. What is it then in terms of reading Kriya Shema? So Amar Lahu, he said to them the following, Aso Chazo, which literally means Bo'u U'ru'u. It's just another way of saying Toshma. Come and listen. Hanet Sifei de Bei Rav. There are these like mats in the base medrash. The honey that students would share. They were big mats, and people would be learning sitting on them, and people apparently would be napping as well. Dahani Ganu Fahani Garse. Some of the students are busy taking a nap. The other ones are busy learning. And what does this prove? So the assumption is that when people are asleep because they're not aware and don't exercise certain control, they will commonly be passing gas. And yet, while the sleeping students are presumably doing that, the shtaying students, the students who are garse, who are learning, they continue learning. So you see that a reach ra she'en lo ikar is not a problem for learning. And now the Gemara qualifies it. Or Rav Sheshet qualifies it, not sure which. V'hani mi li b'divrei Torah, avo b'kriya shma lo. This leniency only applies to Divrei Torah because it would be impossible to learn otherwise. That's the concern. Right? You'd have people, as it is, people batteling off in the Beis Medrash. If you gave them one more reason to battle, that would just be worse. But then the Kriya Shema, and the point is, as Rashi explains, you can't go outside to learn. It's not going to work. Kriya Shema, you're reading once. So if it's a problem where you're sitting, so then you go outside, read Kriya Shema, and then you can come back in. And then the Gemara adds further, V'divrei Torah nami lo amaran, ela dechavre, avadidei lo. It only applies if it's someone else. If you, however, the one who passed gas, and you can still smell it, you have to stop until the reach passes. Two comments about this halacha. Number one, I presume that the reason why you're allowed to study Torah in such a context, now I know why the Chachamim didn't prohibit it, but I assume that because Me'ikar HaDin is permitted. Me'ikar HaDin, if it's a reach rash in lo ikar, it's not a problem of Hayah Machaneh HaKadosh. The fact that it has a bad smell doesn't mean it's an unkadosh machaneh. To be unkadosh, at the very least, you have to have an ikar. You have to have something real there. That's number one. Number two, why then, if it's a person's own bodily emissions, why is one not allowed to learn Torah at that point? I presume that we act there as if the gavra is not roy right now. If a person has just passed gas and it's still so close, they're considered an effect of gavra lo chazi, and therefore they have to wait until the reach passes, and then they can resume learning. Okay. This, by the way, this way, as a general rule, putting aside the question of Birchas HaMazon, where I believe we are Mekel, I have to confirm that, but I explain why in a second, and it's pretty obvious. This is actually Halacha L'maisa. This is Halacha L'maisa, in the context of a Beis HaKnesses, and this certainly can happen, that a person who senses a reach ra of this nature, reach Hashem Ikar, so during davening, if it's not learning, during davening, a person should pause until the reach ra has dissipated. Why is Birchas HaMazon, I'm pretty sure, I have to look it up, why is Birchas HaMazon different? Because Birchas HaMazon was always made after people had eaten, typically their full, and it's kind of like Talmud Torah. If you're going to tell them they have to wait, so then it may take them a really long time before they can recite Birchas HaMazon. And that's why I have to check, but I'm pretty sure that when it comes to Birchas HaMazon, that's one by a reach ra she'en lo ikar. We don't say that a person has to wait, that it is a problem. Okay. So now, the Gemara asks the following question. Itmar. This is at the two dots, the second word on the line about, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 lines down from when they get the medium one. Itmar. Soa overis. Supposing there is, soa, there is excrement, probably in a chamber pot, being carried, or bedpan, being carried past you. It's moving. It's on the move. And let's assume that you don't smell it. Let's assume you don't smell it, but because it's, Rashi says it's a gerach shorei, it's this bedpan. So if somebody's carrying it passing by you, do you need to stop reading Kriya Shema? So Abaye Amar Mutar Likros Kriya Shema, Rava Amar Asur Likros Kriya Shema. Abaye says you can, Rava says you can't. Amar Abaye Mina Minala. Abaye says, how do I know this? Bitznan, hatame ome tacha sa'ilan, v'hatahar over. Supposing somebody is a mitzora. I mentioned this brisa last week. The mitzora is standing underneath a tree, and the tahar is passing by. Or, then the tahar passes by, becomes tame, because the mitzora is fixed, he's stationary under the tree, and therefore, under the tree is considered his makom, and he is mitame that makom, he defiles it, through Ohel, through the process of a common roof. Everything under the tree is Tana. However, Tahar Omei, Tachas Ha'ilan, if the Tahar person is standing stationary under the tree, but the Tomei Over, and the impure person is passing by, so there, the person who's Tomei, who's impure, is not stationary, the Mitzorah, so he's just moving through, so then, Tahar, the person is Tahar. But Bim Amad, if the Mitzorah stops under the tree, then Tomei, because now he's fixed. V'chein be'evan ha'manugas. The same thing is true if someone is carrying an evan, a stone from a house that was declared impure because of taras and was smashed, broken down. So those stones are like a mitzorah. They make things tameh, and even in an olam, even under a common roof. So Abayi says, you see, that if the tzoa is overes, if it's in motion, it's if it's not in that place, just like if the mitzorah is in motion, it's like he's not in that place. Rava disagrees. The Rava Amar Lacha, no. Hasam bekvi'usa talya milsa. Rava says that in order for that to be considered a place that's tameh, in order for it to be considered a makom of the mitzorah, it has to be michutz lamachane moshavo, the place in which he fixes himself. In other words, if the mitzorah is passing by under a tree and I'm standing there, it's not that we're not in the same makom together, we are in the same place. But the only thing that a mitzorah actually creates tumah in, the only space that he creates tumah under, is moshavo, the place that is his fixed place. And therefore, if the mitzorah is moving, he's not kavua, it's not moshavo. But you are in the same makom as the mitzorah. It's not like a mace. A mace is under the same ol, end of discussion. A mitzorah, it has to be moshavo. Which, by the way, would explain another two halachos that the Rishonim quote I was totally unaware of. I knew this Mishnah. Number one, the din of Mitzorah walking through does not apply the leniency. If the Mitzorah is in motion, that he doesn't make the people in their Tame, the stuff under the roof Tame, is only under an Elan, not an Abayis. In Abayis, even if the Mitzorah is walking through, he makes the Tame. Number one. Number two, apparently even in Abayis, if you put a mechitza, not floor to ceiling. If I have a house and I have a mace in one side of the house, the only way to make the other side of the house not be tameh is to build a wall from floor to ceiling. I've created basically two compartments, assuming each one has a door to the outside, its own door. So then I'm in a separate house as a mace. But if I make a mechitza, like a shul mechitza, I make it 10 tfachim or 60 inches or 72 inches tall, and there's plenty of space above it to the ceiling, and there's a dead body on one side, of course the entire house is tameh. But it's not true by mitzorah. If you make a mechitza of asar tfachim, and you're on the other side of the mechitza, it divides the house from the mitzorah, you're tahar. So both of those, I think, point to the fact that it's not really a classic din of ohel. It's not a din of being under the same roof. I could call it as a mitzorah. It's being in the same moshav, the same fixed place of a mitzorah. So a house, by definition, is a much more fixed place than under a tree. A tree is not a place where you normally take up residence under. Most people take residence in a house. So that may be why the house itself, by definition, even if the mitzvah is moving, is considered moshavo. But at the same time, it produces a leniency that if you put a mechitza in the house, even though you're under a common ohel, it doesn't matter because you've basically created now two separate spaces, two separate moshavos within this place, and therefore there would be no tumah from the mitzvah. So that, I think, is what Rava's position is, and not surprisingly, we passed him like Rava. Therefore, when it comes to tzoa, when it comes to the excrement, the gerif shorei, the chamber pots or bedpan being carried through, Rava says that it's within four amos of you, or it's within your sight line, that's considered to be within your makom, and you're not allowed to read Kriya Shema. Okay. Any questions so far? Okay, one last thing I want to talk about, which is just the next line in the Gemara, which bothers me a lot. And I think, though, that I've laid the groundwork for providing answers. Amar Rapapa. Rapapa says that pichazir, the mouth of a pig, is kitsoa overis. It's like tsoa is there. It's like excrement is there. It's kitsoa overis dami. So the Gemara says, pshita. Of course, pigs are filthy somehow. So the Gemara says, Lo tzricha, afal gav besalaf min hara. The pig just came out from wallowing in the river. You figure it's clean by then, at least for now. The halacha is, it's not. So what really bothers me here, and is why is pichazir a problem? So is chazir, according to most Rishonim. If it's not in hides, if it's not in oros, it's not a problem. Rashi writes, in fact, on this piece of pichazir, Rashi writes, when the Gemara says pshita, why is it so obvious that a pig now is a problem? Rashi writes, the pichazir eno belotzela. Of course it's got a pig's eating all sorts of filthy things. Let's say a pig ate its own excrement. So what? The excrement of a pig we saw earlier is only a problem if it's betoch oros. I think the question, it's either a klutz kasha, or the question is so obvious, but I don't know why nobody seems to address it explicitly. In other words, especially, and this is part of the answer, at least for the Rama, especially for those we showed him, who understood that what Rava rejected from the first Braisa was only that the Tzolas Kodim and the Tzolas Chazerim has to be in Oros, so why is Pichazir a problem? So the truth is, according to the Rambam, it's not a problem, because for the Rambam, that's not really what Rava rejected from the first Braisa. For the Rambam, any Tzoa, if it's dirty enough or smells bad enough, could be a problem. So maybe, even whatever you think about the Tzoas Chazerim, maybe what the pig eats in its mouth is so filthy and so dirty, and that's a problem. But for the Rambam, it might not be a problem. For the other Rishonim, I'm not sure what they're going to do with it, unless they assume that a Chazer likes to rummage in the garbage and will be, even have the human excrement in its mouth, and that's why Pichazer is Ketzoa over a stomach. I mean, the last possibility, but it doesn't work for Rashi, is to say that this has nothing to do with Tzoa per se. It's just that pigs were considered so disgusting that the presence of a pig, you know, Tzoa of a Chazer, when the pig's not here, maybe it's not as big a deal. But the Chazer itself, Pichazer, that's considered filthy. That doesn't seem to me to be the case. Certainly explicitly against what Rashi says explicitly. But what else to do with the Pichazer, I don't exactly know. I know this may sound to be an unlikely scenario, but whatever the occurrences are, and I know that there are at least some families in the shul, who have some connection to Camp Stone. So this particular summer, don't ask why, but one of the, non-Jewish members who happened to be working in camp and couldn't leave having to do with issues of vaccination status, he brought his pet pig with him. So there really was a large pig around camp, and you could have had situations where he was walking by with his pig. If kids were, people were davening the outdoor Beit Knesset, you actually could have had a problem. I don't think that the refet in camp has a pig. I think all the animals, I could be wrong, are kosher animals in the refet, but we had a pig in camp this year. So anyway, so that's the halacha. Pichazir is ketzoa verasami, you're not allowed to read kosher. All right, we'll stop here. Any questions before we stop the recording? Okay.